Hello, and welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast. I'm your host, Ben Heck Endorn.
And I'm Jones.
And I'm Parker Doman.
But one big thing we want to talk about is software as service.
Oh, shit.
I guess there's been more shakeups at Microsoft, and like Windows division is now cloud and AI. So, yeah, is Windows going to be like a browser plugin someday? Probably. So we want to talk about that. And I guess we probably have all our own perspectives. Like Jones is an IT person. I am a creative professional. And then Parker has like a cloud service for MacroFab.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah, because you guys process it on AWS, right?
Yeah. And we use a lot of software, and I use a lot of software. So
cool. So that's one thing we want to talk about. What else do we have here? PUBG. Parker finally convinced myself and our friend Mike to get it.
And Jones still hasn't played it yet.
Well, of course not. It's not World of Warcraft.
So we have reached some weird bizarro world where Mike has more game diversity than you.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. It's like you guys got Mike to dive in. That's impressive. So,
well, he still only plays games with word battle in the title.
No, this, like, no, this like is you thing. Say, he's playing at least one more game than I am. So.
Is Mike bought it before Ben did.
Wow.
Yep. But then I'm like, well, I guess everyone else is jumping off this bridge. So anyway, yeah, we're gonna talk about that. Because Parker's been playing it for a while. So yeah, I've only been playing it for like a week.
You guys can try to convince me to buy that too or something.
Sure. I'll also convince you to buy a Switch.
Oh, yes. So Parker wants this topic.
I didn't want this topic. Jones wants this topic.
Oh, okay.
I thought it might be amusing since, you know, as somebody early on that was like, eh, the Switch seems stupid, whatever. Now, like, people at work have them, and I don't know, they're kind of trying to pull me to the dark side. So I was like, oh, Ben and Parker can try to sway me either way.
Is this going to be like when an animated devil and angel appear on your shoulders?
Pretty much.
Tell you what to do. All right. All right. So we have software service, PUBG, and then Jones with the Switch. And then maybe also at the end, we could talk about movies a little bit. I know we kind of talk about movies too much.
Yeah, because Ready
Player One. They're awesome to talk about. So.
Okay. So Parker just saw Ready Player One.
Oh, nice.
Jones and I, I finally saw Justice League, and also a few days ago, I rewatched the very controversial Last Jedi.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't say my opinion of it improved.
A movie that is worse than the prequels.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say
less
so.
Less watchable, yeah. For sure.
You know what? Let's just get cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yes. Yep.
Or if we're trying to get free admission to premieres, we'll burn that bridge when we come to it.
Sure.
All right. So software as service. That's the new thing now.
The new old thing.
Yeah. Well,
Parker, so,
I guess I can start. So this is pretty much like the big problem with software developers is you get like a huge lump sum of money right when you launch your new product, I guess. And then you have to like develop the next version over like what, 2-3 years, and then get another big lump sum. And so it's really hard to like budget that stuff out. So you have these, and also it's kind of bad for like a barrier or a gate for consumers, because you have to pay, like, let's say for Adobe, you have to pay like a couple grand up front, and then you get it for, you know, ever or whatever. Or you can pay $20 a month, and which is a little bit easier to swallow on a month-by-month basis.
$20 a month if you're a student. The rest of us in the real world have to pay $50.
Okay, $50. That's better or easier than someone paying $5,000.
Yeah, I would argue, though, that it's actually more expensive after the first 3 years, but we can talk about that.
Yeah, I'm just giving, like, the background, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the big software I use that just moved to this style of service is Eagle, which is a PCB drawing software. when they went to version 8, which came out like 6-8 months ago.
Yep.
They moved to as a, you know, service where you basically paid like, I can't remember how much it is per month. It's like $50 for the pro or whatever they call it now. And it ends up being, at least for me, cheaper than the old way of doing it, which was you'd pay like $1,000 every 2-3 years for to get the new version.
How is $600 a year cheaper than $1,000 every 3 years?
No, I'm just pulling numbers. I have to go look at the numbers. When I originally did the calculations, it was cheaper.
All right.
Because they'd have like a major version about every year and a half. And like I was still running on version 6 when version 8 came out because I didn't want to pay for version 7.
See, the thing is, that's one thing you lose with these cloud-based things. I mean, ultimately, the cloud stuff is in the favor of the software companies. I mean, let's face it. So what you lose is the ability to choose. Because once you get sucked into their subscription model, you're stuck in there.
Where we like, had that problem.
We're like,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, where like in your case, you know, like there, you decided like, I don't want to pay that money for version 7. I can keep, you know, 6 will still work for me now. And then maybe when 8 comes out, you get it.
That's true.
Now that choice doesn't exist anymore.
We had that problem just now with...
The premium is... Over when you pay the subscription, it's $600 $500 a year. So it works out about the same price. And so now you get the new version all the time.
Well, except for the fact that you don't get to choose if you're going to delay your upgrade.
Yes.
That's true.
Yep.
Yeah. Because that is true. Because if you got version 6 and skipped 7 and then bought 8, you saved money. But you didn't get all the goodness that 7 had.
So we use Zencastr, which is Zencastr with an E missing at the end, which is an podcast software. We've been using it for like, about 6 months now or
at least longer than that, I think. Yeah.
It's worked out really well. But then when we all logged in this evening, it had some new thing to it, which is I'm going to check every damn little thing and give you a passed warning or fail. And then each one of us had something fail. So it took us about half an hour before we all got synced up. You're like, oh, your microphone has to be on. Your drivers have to be updated. Anyway, that's something that's changed since last month and cost us time. And we have no control over that change.
And
yeah, the best thing about that was Jones logged in and could talk to us, but he failed the checks.
Yeah. And then I changed my setting. Like there's a little gear you click and it was defaulting to my microphone on my headset. And all I did is I changed it to another option that was communications dash exact same name of device on my machine. And then it said, oh, pass the check. So it was exactly the same device, same driver, like nothing. I just changed a setting in their system. But yeah, it's an excellent example. You know, and like in my case, at my company, there's a debate going on about cloud versus on-prem for certain things that we're working on doing. And I'm very skeptical of the cloud. Like it has uses for certain applications, I think, but there's other areas where you lose some control, like we saw with this software, like with their software as a service offering for SQL Server. There was an incident a year ago where there was like a, you know, security related thing that they changed. You got like 10 days notice that they were like, oh, by the way, this feature, it goes away on this date because of security reasons, which it's good to fix it for security reasons. But I'm like, imagine we had like 50 applications that we were all running out in the cloud that were all using that. How the fuck do we like update all those and get them fixed in 10 days? You know, that ain't happening. You know, so you lose also control over, you know, so many things with it.
Yeah, going off the losing control, because Macrofab, the company I help run, we run on all AWS stuff, which is, you know, that's pretty typical of startups and, and other companies like that. But we AWS had S3, which is kind of like their... It's one of their database style storage containers, I guess. and it went down.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one of our nodes, I guess, basically uses S3 for configuration data. And so I was like, oh, okay, I guess everything is down until Amazon gets their shit together.
Yep.
Thanks, Amazon.
Was that across the whole planet or just in a certain...
entire planet.
Wow.
And there's...
So anything that used S3, I think it was like last week on like Tuesday or something.
Yeah.
Like fucked everything up.
And it's just, there's like so many things where, I mean, like we've been doing things like putting email out in Office 365 and so when you do that, like in the enterprise, you actually get a different license of Office to use. And so it's actually an Office 365 license for each user for Office. We constantly have issues with users like losing their license activation. So then like their email won't work. You have, you know, somebody on the help desk has to, you know, dick around and get them, you know, reactivated. Like the shit happens like all the time. There was like a service outage with SharePoint last week where it was like, you know, workflow notifications weren't being sent. And I don't know. I mean, it's like, yes, you can have that stuff happen on-prem as well, but obviously you have far greater control. Whereas out there, you're at their mercy. Also, what if your internet connection happens to flake out, which guess what happens if you've got all that shit out in the cloud? Well, guess what? You're not doing business.
You can't get your shit.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like, you know, we use like GitHub and stuff. And so it's like, if GitHub went down, like that would be, I think that would hurt a lot of companies if GitHub went down for a day or two.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Like we put our source code in the, you know, like the Visual Studio Team Services online thing and all that. So, you know, same deal. But yeah, I don't know. There's just, to me, there's like this rush to jump in there, but without really fully, I think, thinking through everything. Plus, you have the big question that seems to continually remain unanswered, which is who really owns your data once it's out there?
Yeah, it's like, because if it's on-premise, you own the data because it's your hard drive.
Your backup
software. But if it's their hard drive, yeah. Is it really your zeros and ones? Because technically, Amazon owns that then.
Yep. And, you know, if somebody comes around saying, oh, hey, we need to look at customer X's shit and they're in the same little, you know, container, whatever that you are, you know, it's like, well, your information's potentially getting exposed to someone and you might not ever even know what happens, you know?
Yeah. But going back to that tech support thing, that's actually the worst thing with the new version Eagle is like every... like three to five starts of that program, it will ask you to log back in. It's like, why can't you just remember my fucking password?
Yep. Yeah, Visual Studio can be a bit of a pest with that too. It's not bad, but every now and then you'll get that sort of shit. And it's just, but yeah, I mean, in the last, like earlier this week, we had it happen on two straight days where like a whole bunch of users, like their Office activations just like ceased to be activated, and so they had to, you know, so you had a bunch of users that were disrupted from doing their work, because if you don't have that stupid license activated, well, guess what, you can't use freaking Office.
See, on paper, there are cool things about just using your login, you know, to do it. You don't have to worry about activations.
Yeah, yeah.
Or God forbid dongles like we had back in the 90s.
Ooh, hardware dongles.
Yeah. Yeah, but then as you mentioned, like if everything's tied to the cloud, yeah, you have to have an active – actually, I ran into that last week at the Midwest RepRap Fest. I was like, I'm going to design a chip clip. So I booted up Autodesk 360, just like Eagle 8. And I had to crawl onto the internet in order for it to log in. And usually that one's really good about not making you log back in on like Eagle. I mean, they're owned by the same company now, but obviously they're two completely different teams. But yeah, yeah. I still had to find I have some crappy internet connection, which, you know, it basically is at a county fairground. And just so I could log in to start up the program, but then it worked.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's like, and I'm not totally convinced of like the performance of it either, because like some of the things we're looking at doing is kind of some of our core data type initiatives, like where do we host it and all that. But, you know, we're going to have like on-prem stuff that's going to talk to it. And we've done some tests and it's like, yeah, having to go, you know, from on-prem out to Azure and back, you know, obviously, you know, physics, you know, that's not going to perform as well as going to a local database sitting, you know, in the same server farm.
Building.
Yeah, exactly. So, so when you're talking about, you know, applications that require like high performance, you know, that's the big thing I'm really fighting against right now. Cause there's a lot of really compelling reasons to go to the cloud, which I totally understand. Like for developers, you know, it's very empowering. They can become very self-sufficient out there. Cause it's like, oh, I just need to, you know, spin up a little test machine and do this and that, you know, they could just go and sandbox the shit out of stuff out there. You know, I totally understand that. But when you get into production world, there's, you know, far bigger considerations, whether or not something is convenient for a developer to use, you know? And so it's a battle. We're going to have more discussion next week about it, which I'm really looking forward to. So.
At work, I guess.
Question, did your company do a study on how much time would be saved by saying on-prem instead of on-premises?
No.
Like a second per meeting, perhaps?
Yeah, I don't know. Everybody says on-prem, and now I've been indoctrinated to it as well. So,
okay. It sounds dumb.
I know it does.
It's like, just say the whole word, damn it.
Yeah, pretty much. And one other big thing that worries me about the cloud too is like especially with like my company, because it's like I worked there when the recession happened, you know, 10 years ago, economy went to shit. You know, company hit hard times, there were layoffs, you know, all sorts of stuff. And guess what we did? We didn't buy shit for hardware for like 5 years. You know, we bought the absolute minimum
I see where this is going.
Yeah, and so we stretched the shit out of that hardware for years and years. Whereas when you're out in cloud world, you're not going to be able to call up, you know, Microsoft or Amazon and be like, oh, hey, you know, our company is kind of struggling. You know, can you knock our bill down like 40%? You know, so you're like chained in to that cost no matter what.
Yes.
And you can't get back out very easy at all. It's very much like easy to get in, very difficult to get out. So,
speaking of that, that reminds me of like Adobe, right? Because I was thinking about the Adobe subscription costs and I was like, oh, I should reduce my web server costs more than my Adobe costs, you know, like kind of a cost neutral kind of thing. Because my existing web host was needlessly expensive. And then, you know, by Parker's suggestion, I went to DigitalOcean and now it's like a lot cheaper.
Nice.
Anyway, but so like the Adobe thing, that was kind of my cross to bear. Like for the longest time, you could buy the suite, like production premium or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it was like $1,700, right? Which is a lot,
right? Oh,
yeah. But, you know, you could update that for $600, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, as long as you bought it once, and as long as you didn't skip more than two versions, I believe, you could update it basically forever until, of course, Creative Cloud came along.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it, like you do the – and like Adobe, you could easily go, you know, four or 5 years without updating it.
Yeah.
Easily. Yep. So it takes 1,700 divided by 600. That means it takes 3 years before it's the same cost, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you go those 3 years and then, you know, you update it. So let's say you update it only every 3 years. So you'd be at you'd still be at the same cost. But then the fact that you don't have to update it for another 3 years, then you're like $1,200 ahead.
Yes. Yep.
So if you think about it over time, like I've been using Adobe products since 2002. So if you think about it in the long haul, it definitely costs more money.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like one of the big things too, like, I mean, I'm a database administrator, so I'm always focused on that part. And so like, if you look at something like Azure, which I always want to call it Azure, but people always...
I like to call it Azure.
Yeah,
as well.
Azure sounds better. It sounds like a genie or something.
People always call it...
All the developers at work look at me weird when I call it that.
But you look out there, and so they have, you know, a SQL server.
It should only be Azure if it was A-S-H-U-R-E.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's weird, but...
We're on your side, Jones.
Sweet. I'll let people at work know that. So,
they're like, who the hell are you talking about?
Who are these assholes? Let's see. But they have a software as a service offering for SQL Server. And so essentially it's like you get this thing that's kind of like a SQL instance, and then you can spin up databases on it. But it's not full-fledged like SQL Server. So there's some things you don't get, but it works for most stuff, which is nice. So, but the thing is, you pay per database you stand up, which, okay, fine. You know, they're pretty cheap to start. You know, you can make one for like $30 a month that, you know, is not bad. But those prices jump pretty dramatically when your DTU rate goes up, which that's like this weird metric Microsoft has come up with. It's like a database transmission unit, I think is what that stands for. It's some weird like mushing of like CPU, memory, whatever together. But you can generally equate it to like a transaction per second type value.
That sounds like when you like buy credits in an app.
Yeah, yeah. And so
you spend like $1 and buy like 100 Nintendo bucks.
Do you have enough bright gems to keep your server running, Jones?
I don't know. So, but that's like, I look at it and, you know, like our biggest database we have, you know, if I look at that thing, like pretend I was going to go and drop that out there, which that's not going to happen because it's for like this thick app legacy ERP system we have. Thick. But pretend I throw that thing out there. It's like, you know, like a 1.2 terabyte database, and its peak transactions per second are, it can get up to like 23 or 2400 per second. And they actually don't even have a server that meets that spec in the software as a service, like for a database, I should say. But if you took like the biggest database they have out there, it is $15,000 a month. And so that's like one database.
Fuck.
One database.
Does it at least, you know, back up the data for you and keep it safe?
Yep. Like currently it will keep it for 35 days for like point in time restore. And they've just finally implemented like a longer term retention mechanism. Because that was another pain point I had, is that we have a requirement that we keep backups at least a year. And so out there we can't do that. But now it's like in preview phase. You'll see this a lot with Azure. A lot of times they'll have like, ooh, this feature's in preview phase now. So you can go and like check it out, but you know, it's technically not prime time ready, but you could start using it.
If you mean like G2.
Yeah, which is in beta forever. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so it's like, to me, it's like my company has historically been very poor about like thinking about things like retention or performance and like maximizing the performance of queries and things like that. So if you write poor queries, you're going to eat more of those DTUs. That means your database has become more expensive. You know, and so those are things, it's tough to put a number on them, you know, like right out of the gate. Unless I take, you know, like one of those existing things and say, hey, drop that in there. Here's what happens. But
right.
But these are all things, you know, they're questions that need to be answered and, you know, thought about. And
well, here's a question. Like you talked about physics earlier, and, you know, all of these transactions are happening over the cloud. And I mean, I would think that the most internet connections in general would be slower than any sort of like intra-company network.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, it's like, to me, like where the cloud is really great for things like what we do is, you know, like let's say we want to make a mobile app, you know, and it doesn't require like crazy performance, you know, like maybe you want to upload a file with a mobile app or something like that. You know, it's like, oh, okay, call like a web API, dump the file into a database. It returns like, yep, successful. Maybe it takes it 5 seconds or whatever to do that. Whoop-de-doo. And then you have like maybe an internal process that reaches out to the cloud and then sucks those things down into your on-premises systems.
he spent the extra but half you're not, seconds.
Wow, he's cool.
But so if I'm you impressed. Do that, you know, these aren't like things that are super dependent on, upon real-time performance. But like when you're talking about like a highly transactional system, you know, like processing credit card payments and, you know, posting transactions to your general ledgers and things like that, where you're doing like, you know, tens of thousands of these things every day. You know, performance, there's a certain expectation there and a certain thing that people have become accustomed to. And that's where I think you get in trouble unless you put like all of your stuff out in the cloud. You know, which for like a startup, like,
that's how we are,
yeah, like where Parker's at, you know, to me, like the cloud's great. For companies like that, like you're the small startup, whatever, it's like you don't have to hire an IT guy. You know, you don't have to like buy hardware. You don't have to, you know, buy like an internet connection to host your web services on, you know, and all that. You know, it's like, here, I just, all that shit's dealt with. I just need to spin up a website and, you know, make it. And I have to put my software and my source code out here. Like, it's really great, you know, for that, I think.
And going back to who owns your data, you kind of have to look at like the terms of service. Because for like S3 and all the other like Amazon storage stuff, it's like they basically say it's your data. But when you look at like Amazon AWS machine learning stuff, it's they can look at your data, like your models that you're putting in there for machine learning. They can look at that stuff.
Yep.
So yeah, you gotta be kind of careful on that. If it's like, you don't want to put like customer sensitive data into like AWS machine learning, because yeah, that's no bueno.
One big thing too, like with, you know, storage and performance too, you know, like beyond the who owns your data question, but I mean, like, you know, like my company, we've bought flash storage arrays. I'm sorry, the cloud storage is not flash. It will not perform at the level that storage will perform, you know. And I did notice that they have added something out there in Azure now where it, like if you actually build a VM out there, you can choose what storage tier to put it in. They still don't tell you what that actual storage is, but they'll call it, you know, like premium or standard or whatever. But of course, there's a, you know, a definite price hit, you know, for going into the premium storage.
Yeah, I think on DigitalOcean, you can get a solid state drive.
Yeah, see, and that's still not even flash storage, so that's more because we did it.
Oh, you're talking about that M2 thing?
We've got like pure storage flash arrays is what we use. So,
and those are plugged into like the PCI Express slots.
I actually haven't even seen it because I don't even deal with the storage anymore. But the array we had before this had like SSD, like it had tiered storage in it. So it had like an SSD layer, and then it had like a 15K RAID array, and then it had like the freaking nearline 7200, you know, slow as shit stuff down at the bottom. But then we switched to flash array, so now it's all the same storage. You just create like big pools on it, but I mean, it's pretty cool, and they do like,
sounds expensive.
Yeah, it's not cheap. And it does like dedupe and all sorts of stuff like that, so you get to, you know, really maximize your storage, which is great. So
yeah, I was doing benchmarks on my my RAID 0 M2 drives, and it blows away even a solid state SATA drive. So having a direct connection definitely helps. Now Parker and I want to know what this looks like, right, Parker?
What, the flash array?
What looks like?
Yeah.
Go and look up here.
I wonder if it's an M2 or is it plugged, or maybe it's like M2 plugged into PCI Express.
Actually, we just put a new controller in our DR site like today, but I didn't get to actually look at it. But if you go to Pure Storage, it's probably just purestorage.com. I'm sure they've got like pictures and videos like showing what's in there. I got to see Last Jedi for free thanks to those guys. How exciting.
Oh, yeah. Well, Enterprise Data Cloud Solution Partners.
Of course.
Meet Ari, industry's first AI-ready infrastructure.
Yeah, they just...
Delivered by Pure Storage.
Yeah, they just sent an email, like, today about that. Like, I think they partnered with NVIDIA, I want to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it says. Is this FlashArray X?
Let me look. I don't know if I even know which one we have.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's see what this looks like.
Oh, Pure Storage. I was typing
oh, no.
in Pure.
No, Pure.
Storage. It was like where you can put your boat.
Pure.
Let's see.
Just give me a goddamn picture of this thing, website.
Tier 1 storage. I get pictures of like mountains and
oh,
shit.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, it's just it's a huge card with what looks like cooling on the end and a heat sink and a bunch of... looks like NAND flashes. Yeah, it's non-volatile memory, connected raw flash. I don't know what the card connector is.
Can you send it? I can't find it.
Yeah, I'll put it in the chat. It's so relevant. Well, I guess it is relevant.
Let's see what this looks like.
Oh, look, you can get a 1.5 petabyte version. Oh, that's probably...
But, I bet that's cheap.
Okay. Interesting.
Oh, yeah, look, they all stack up into that machine there.
Yep.
That rack.
Yeah, so it's probably it looks like it's a hot swap style, like.
Setup. Oh, look, a full rack. You can get up to 15 petabytes.
Yeah, I
hopefully that
hate
petabytes.
To think what a full rack of a Pure Storage would cost. they are pretty cool because, yeah, they take up.
Donate your firstborn child here for your
lead
developer.
They do take
developer.
Up, like, way less rack space, too, which is really nice.
Well, that's pretty cool.
I think we have the M20, I want to say. So I think we had to upgrade from the M10 because I think we breached the 30 terabyte barrier, so we had to actually upgrade controllers.
Well, you know, all software, you don't own the software. You are licensed the right to use it. Even if you have... a DuckTales Nintendo cartridge. That cartridge just represents your right to the license to use the software. Because if you own the software, you could dump the ROM and share it online, and it would be perfectly legal, but it's not.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Oh, there, I see.
But that said, yeah, I mean, God, I can't remember. I think it was, what was that program from Sonic Foundry who used to be in Madison?
Oh.
SoundForge?
Yes, yeah.
They got SoundForge 96, and
you used that for like 15 years at least.
Yeah, at least 15 years. But the thing is, it did exactly what I needed it to do.
Exactly.
Not like audio changed that much. Now I think now they're called Sony Digital. I think they're still here.
Yeah, I remember for many.
They make Vegas.
I remember for many years when we were recording the podcast, like from the beginning. For many years afterwards, you would use. That software when we were recording it.
I probably only switched to Audacity like for general purpose audio recording. Like, oh God, probably when I made America's Most Haunted.
Okay. Yeah.
So it wasn't that long ago. So I used, probably about 15 years.
So I use Reaper, which is a more full fledged audio recording software that is free use, I guess, if you're just a maker style person. So check that one out, Ben. It's a lot more stuff in it than
I could probably get the Adobe stuff through my subscription. I just don't care. I hate learning more programs.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I found is Reaper does have quite a it's like a Blender. It's got a big learning curve of where shit's at.
But I might fear the Reaper in that case.
And you might fear the Reaper. I like it. I record all my podcasts on Reaper. So
Jones, you can get an Iron Maiden pinball machine.
Oh God, I saw that email. I got it. That company that
out.
I bought the Tron machine from years ago. I'm on their mailing list, so that's how I. That's how I know when pinball machines come out. Still, so So they just sent me an email about that yesterday. It looks like Stern got the license in the end. So, but yes, I will not be buying one of those. So,
yeah, apparently if people type in something enough times into Pinside, Stern will make it.
Makes sense. People were...
They're making Munsters. Same thing. Yeah, what kind of world do we live in where that's a relevant license?
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess the same world where they're making a third Elvira pinball.
Well, they are doing that. Jesus.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just been delayed endlessly. It's already finished. They just have. Well, basically, oh yeah, I can talk about whatever I want now. Stern doesn't have enough programmers to program all the games, so they basically snap up every license they can get, and they hire all these old pinball guys. Yeah. But they don't have enough programmers to finish the games because programmers, as you know, are expensive and in demand, and might not want to move to Illinois.
No. Good programmers are hard to find and in demand. There's a ton of programmers out there.
Okay, but I'm just saying that's their bottleneck.
Unfortunately, they get paid well regardless of ability. I would say so.
Run to the
it's actually just,
the music would be good for a pinball. It's very video gamey.
I mean, the thing with developers is, it's the classic thing where, you know, the demand is far greater than the supply. So, I mean, it's, if people are looking for an industry to get into for jobs, like, that's an excellent one to get into.
I bet you Ben was really bored and was on Pinside and saw the thread.
Actually, I was not on Pinside during that. I did not. I just saw that randomly.
It's weird how little I think of pinball anymore.
I don't have any machines left.
I mean,
I still have my two machines.
I hadn't thought of it. I mean, it had been like quite a while, and then I got that email, and I'm like, oh, shit. Somebody finally made the Iron Maiden machine. All right. People have been clamoring for that thing for a long time, so...
Yeah, Iron Maiden, Jaws, Munsters, Harry Potter, which will never happen. It's kind of funny, though. Elvira, Cassandra Peterson, she was dragged around by her drunken dad to bars when she was a kid. And so she played pinball out of boredom, and that's why she loves them. And J.K. Rowling was dragged around by her drunken dad to bars as a kid, and that's why she hates pinball.
Interesting.
Same story, different outcome.
Huh.
It's what you make of your situation, I guess.
Because I hate when Adobe or whatever all of a sudden changes. It's like, oh, now you have to draw a circle this way. It's like, don't waste my time.
I would agree there, where the good thing with – this is the thing with like how Eagle has it set up. You don't have to update if you don't want to update.
That's cool.
You just have to pay. But yeah, you're right on that. When you're forced to update, that's never a good thing.
Well, Adobe doesn't force you to update either, but it's kind of a, I don't want to say slippery slope, catch-22 is a better word. You're like, oh, well, I'm paying for this, you know, constant update, so I guess I better take them.
Yep. The bad thing about Eagle is when it updates, it doesn't remove the old stuff. It just makes a new file, a new folder on your hard drive of like Eagle 8.4, and it installs it there, and then it changes all your shortcuts and everything. It's like, and it changes all your preferences. And it's just like, I haven't updated in like three versions, so like it's like I have like 8.6, and it's like up at the like 8.9 or whatever. And I just won't update because it just fucks everything up.
Adobe Illustrator used to do that. So I have a folder which is like templates, you know, like templates of files. And every time it would update, it would wipe out that folder because it's contained within the Adobe install. But the last couple updates, it didn't. So apparently they fixed it. But I had to keep an extra copy of that. And every time I'd update, I was like, oh, god damn it. I had to like, you know, copy those files back over. But again, I thought software as service is supposed to make my life better. There's a lot of times when it wastes my time or your time.
It just makes more money for the developers.
Well, yeah. I mean, like everything in life, it's like, why was this done? Answer, to make more money.
Yep. Because then they can, like I say, they make it really easy. They give you lots of tools. Like if you're a company like mine trying to put stuff in it, they make that really easy. But trying to get it back out, there isn't a lot of shit there, because once they got you, they can put the screws to you, you know? So,
well, yeah, you gotta make your service sticky. Yep. And that's their thing.
Let's move on to the next topic, which is PUBG. What does PUBG stand for, Parker, for all zero of the listeners who don't know?
Players Unknown Battlegrounds, which has battle in the name. So Mike plays it.
So apparently every game now is going Battle Royale. How long until you think Sea of Thieves goes Battle Royale? Like a month?
Maybe.
I actually kind of want to play Sea of Thieves because that game actually looks interesting.
Microsoft Excel will go Battle Royale.
That'll be part of their software as a service model. I'm curious about Sea of Thieves as well, but I haven't taken the plunge. But
apparently, there's not a whole lot of content.
That's what I've been hearing. It's a lot of fun for like maybe the first day, and then it becomes repetitive. Apparently, but it was a neat concept, but.
So PUBG is like the world's most popular indie game because it really feels like an indie game.
It's the most popular first-person shooter as well.
Doesn't Fortnite surpass it, hasn't it?
There's a lot.
I have no idea. This is the thing, is I downloaded and installed Fortnite and played the Battle Royale. I played it for one round, uninstalled it, went back to PUBG.
I think that's what Mike said, too.
Yeah, it's just more. I don't know. It PUBG or Battle Fortnite just didn't feel
well. Fortnite,
it's weird because PUBG is really clunky, but for some reason the battle, like when you actually fight people, it's so intense. Whereas Fortnite, it's kind of like everything's so smooth, it loses.
Well,
that
I'm sure Fortnite is a more solid game because it's developed by an old developer.
I mean, the game was in development for 5 years before PUBG
even
came out.
It started as like a zombie tower defense game, and then nobody cared.
Yeah, that you built shit.
And then they're like, oh, we can put a battle royale mode on it and make it free to play. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's actually bigger for concurrent users than PUBG now because it's free as opposed to $30.
Yeah. Well, it's like the biggest game in the world right now is League of Legends, and that's free to play. So there's a model.
Well, there you
go.
Again, it's software as a service. Yeah. But PUBG is. So I started playing it last week, and it's really clunky. The engine, I know it's Unreal, but the engine kind of sucks. But it's really fun.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like when you get into the game. The firefights are really intense, and I think it's because the system is so restrictive, it feels like, I guess. Because like if you go into prone, you just don't go into prone. It makes sure your body has room to go into prone, and everything is like...
Yeah, and if you want to stick your gun out a window, you have to break the window, otherwise you can't do it. Or even if you're like strafing, like if there's like a window or a window pane with two broken windows in it, therefore no windows, and if you're strafing back and forth, your gun will actually raise up when you go across the divider in the middle. It's very strict.
Yeah, so it's very and so it feels clunky that way, but it's somewhat realistic, I guess.
See,
it just feels weird on
I
the
just
video
wish
game
it
end.
Played as well as something like Battlefield 1, where like it's just obviously, you know, you're talking about
the frame rate is butter smooth.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about like, you know, probably like what, 20 times the budget difference between those titles.
That's
my issue with it. It's very janky, but it's still fun because it's mostly like planning and scavenging. There's like not that much battle in it.
Yeah, you spend most of the game setting up your end game.
Oh, Mike and I were playing last night, and we almost made chicken dinner.
Yes, so chicken dinner, for those that don't know, is when you win.
Well, how do you win the game?
You get chicken dinner. You're the last squad standing.
So it can be nobody, you know, all solo or squads of two, squads of three, squads of four, and they even had an 8-man squad test the other day.
So yeah, we couldn't.
You know what?
You
know what kind of reminds me of, Parker, is Cuphead in a way, because Cuphead was so goddamn difficult. That when you actually succeeded, you felt really good about it.
Yeah, this game's like that too, because how combat is set up, where when you succeed in a really good like cover fire, and then one of your squad mates goes around the flank and you pull that off, it's like, it's really satisfying. And then it's also satisfying when you get your ass kicked, because then you just learn from that experience.
And there's, you know, even if you're playing like something like, you know, Battlefield 1, where it's like, oh, look, I could be the top player in the server. Even that's not really that big of a deal. But in Battlegrounds, it's like, you know, can you be the last squad alive and win the winner chicken dinner? Which is not, well, I'm sure you've done it plenty of times, but it's not easy.
No, that's the thing is I can count it on my fingers how many times I've done it. So it's like 8 or something.
I'm watching the thing for it.
But it makes it really satisfying.
I'm watching the main page on their website for it. I like the look of the environments. Like, they're mostly colorful, kind of bright. They're not all dreary and shitty like certain other games.
It's a really big
looks map. Like it.
I started playing the game right before it got super popular. And so it was really buggy. But that's the thing is, it was really buggy. And like half the time we'd have to bounce out of the server because one of our friends crashed out. And so you'd have to basically start the game like 3 or 4 times with your whole group to get in. But it was worth it because it was just so much fun. It was just like, just the tactics is, and I know there's games that probably do like squad based co-op tactics better, but I don't know. It's just you versus the world. You and your friends versus the world is what
Parker,
makes it
I was just
going
to say, Mike and I were playing last night, I think 2-player, or I think we might have been playing with the other guys as well. But anyway, it was just me and Mike left, and Mike's, what happened? His computer crashed or something happened, or he got disconnected. He got disconnected, so his player icon stopped moving, and there was like a disconnect icon on top of it. He just stood there, right? And he rebooted his computer, turned the game back on in Steam, and was able to rejoin the match in progress.
Yep. Yeah, they added that only like 3 months
ago. Yeah, but I was like, holy cow. That was impressive.
Yeah, a lot of games that are like this, Ben, do that. Like League of Legends. Well,
but, I mean, if you think about it, like, since it's such a long form, you know, game mode, you pretty much have to, you know, you have to account for that. So, yeah, if a person like gets 20 minutes into a game, there's some sort of technical issue beyond their control and they get kicked from the game, making it easy for them to rejoin makes them happy. I mean, I think conversely, like, once the player count drops for Battlegrounds, it's going to drop very quickly, because like once you're no longer to immediately get back into a game, it's going to be less fun to play, because right now there's so many people playing it. Like, even though a round lasts like, what, 20 minutes or so, like if you get killed, it's permadeath, Jones. Like once you're dead, you're dead. So, but basically, usually if one person on your team dies, your team tends to all go at once, it seems like, or maybe half and half. But then what you do is the other people spectate.
If you're Ben kind of like chickens out and runs away. So he's always the last person.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. Right. Rules.
That's just being smart. But the thing is,
there's so many people playing that y'all can bounce to lobby and then find another 100 people to play like immediately. Yeah,
instantly.
Yeah, it sounds like it's one of those games like where it just kind of has this. It just has it, whatever it is that makes it fun to play. That's, I don't know. That's what I'm picking up on. Because that's like,
just has it.
Because I keep playing, you know, like World of Warcraft, and it's like, you know, there's better looking MMOs out there. There's ones that maybe have, you know, better features and stuff. But I don't know, for me, that game, it's just like endlessly engaging. You know, like there's always something to do. It's always fun, no matter what I'm doing in it. And that's what this sounds like. You know, it just has that thing that you can't really put your finger on, but you know it's fun. So.
Yeah, it's like you get to you plan out what you're going to do. So you're like, oh, we should drive along that hillside so people don't see us, or we should go into those buildings, and it feels like your strategic decisions matter. Because it's so open world, they can't pigeonhole you into certain.
Yeah, I was just thinking, it sounds like it's kind of like, you know, like when we played Bad Company, you know, it's like, okay, we know a bunch of bastards are going to come out of rabbit building or this and that. You know, like there's always the same things to play, but this sounds like every match is different, essentially.
Yeah, right now there's just two maps. What are they? Like, they're like 8 miles across. I mean,
holy
they're
shit.
Really big.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to come out. There's a third map coming out that's actually a compact map for like the four. Because right now, like, there's one map that, depending on where you're at, it's close quarters or it's going to be like open field. And then there's one that's like a desert. So, like, almost everything is open field. And they're coming out with one that's like, it's going to try to force people to be in close combat. I'm hoping they come up with a snow map. I'd like that.
Yeah, I got to have a snow map. Oh, that'd be cool.
I have a snow map for an
like
FPS.
Footprints in the snow.
Yeah,
you can see people have been there.
Cool.
Oh, you can track people. But when the footprints turn to red.
Oh, yeah. Then you would know, like, what,
then
when
you would
hunt
know
deer.
That it was. And then you would know it was assault.
No,
it
I'm
was salt.
Last Jedi.
You would know it wasn't snow, basically.
So is that guy like he's on some planet he's never been to before? He's like, oh, I'm just gonna eat this. I'm gonna see what this planet tastes like.
Funny,
I don't know. The thing is, if you see salt, you pretty much know what it is. So you probably
no,
just
they
like,
did
I
that
think
just
this
to make
salt,
the point
so
that it's
it.
Like, look, it's not a snow planet. Like that's why they.
Yeah. I know that, Jones, but I'm. Talking about how that character's thought process
his
would have been.
His thought process didn't exist. It was just exactly what Jones said.
It was funny. I was just talking about your tendency to have taste materials the other day, Ben.
Oh, I don't have
but
to.
But it was that's like, because one of my coworkers was asking him about the Switch, because he was one of the people that bought it like a year ago.
Oh, and, I know where this is going.
And I had no idea this was a thing, but he made a comment about how the cartridges taste terrible, like in their intent. That's like intentionally done so like kids don't eat them and stuff. And I'm like, seriously? And he's like, yeah, they whatever they do to them, they make them taste bad intentionally. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if Ben's ever tasted one of these.
That's the thing is, I didn't know about this. I
was like,
about
if he was anywhere near a Switch, that would have been the first thing
I didn't know
did,
about
like,
this.
The cartridge.
Well, that's the thing is they were talking about it on like, you know, Joystick or whatever, some internet video game website. And they're like, the Switch cartridges taste bad. And I'm like, I got mine. Yeah. I'm like, I wonder if it tastes bad because of that article. Lick.
Yeah, some chemical called like butyrol. Like they put another thing
something
as well.
Like that, yeah.
So here's the thing about tasting things. I would like to explain myself. It's like it's not really about tasting them. It's about feeling the texture with your teeth. Because your teeth, just like your fingers, they have a lot of nerves connected to them. But they're connected to your bones as well. So when you see me taste something, I'm not necessarily tasting it. It's like I'm feeling. I'm feeling the texture of it through my teeth and my bones.
Fair enough.
Like, that's how you can tell if something's steel or aluminum, because they feel like different.
I remember when like we were at Ale Asylum that time, and they have, like, those metal menus and all that, and you, like, took one, and you were, like, biting the edge of it, and I'm just like, Jesus Christ, who the hell knows who's handled that damn thing and what they've done with it?
I was also drunk at that time, so.
But it was just funny because you're like sitting there.
Well, I was trying to figure out
and
what
you,
it was.
And you remember you told the bartender you were like, "This is you know blah 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 like aluminum or whatever." And
you see, I didn't have a magnet with me to test if it was steel.
Now this thing, Jones,
I don't think
did
so,
he get laid because of that.
Oh, I don't think that would get you laid.
The bartender was cute,
okay,
but
so
yeah,
don't think
I got
things,
him
kids.
in the door or whatever. So.
Or the number you
never
get the
never
number
go
over.
For
that's not a good move.
No. What were we talking about? Okay, we were talking about salt and
salt
tasting
PUBG.
well, since you brought up the Switch, maybe we should move on to Switch.
I did see that PUBG is only $30, so maybe I will be tempted into getting it.
You should buy it.
Because
we can play right after this
because
podcast.
Jones is so hurting for money, he has to only buy a $30.
But that's why I'm not hurting for money. I've become very frugal the older I get. So
that's a good point.
I was thinking about that the other day. It's like, I don't buy
anyway.
I don't buy much shit anymore, which was why I was kind of like thinking about the Switch. I'm like, I don't buy that many movies anymore. Yeah. I just play WoW, so I don't buy games really. Yep. That's
true. A subscription Jones. Service. That reminds me. Chris sent this to me. It's a website. It tells you whether or not a 4K Blu-ray is real or fake.
Oh, yeah. I would like to have that.
So maybe I should explain what that means. Sure. Most movies still do their effects and digital intermediate in 2K.
Is that the save software for service?
It probably does time? Save rendering yeah. time if you think about it. Think about when they did The Hobbit. It was at 60 frames a
48,
second?
48, I think, no. Wasn't it?
It was like double frame rate. 4K, so you're talking like what? 16x increase? No, 8x increase. Because you're talking about four times the resolution and twice the speed. So basically it'll say, okay, this movie, like most old movies, like that were all film, like the Die Hard trilogy, that's like real 4K because basically it's just a 4K scan mm-hmm. of film. But then there'll be like
Fast and Furious or something.
Or Valerian in the City of a Thousand Planets, like, you know, shot on RE 3.5, but digital intermediate at 2K. So once it goes down to 2K, it's just they're basically just upscaling it back up. So, but Last Jedi, your favorite movie, is 4K.
I'll just run right out and buy it then.
So it sounds like you want to buy a Switch.
I don't know.
Jones.
People at work have been trying to sway me to the dark side, and so I was contemplating it because
They want you to buy an Apple?
Well, I already did that. I've got an iPad. So, but an iPad Pro, no less. But,
How many fucking iPads do you have?
I have the one that came with my car, which is an iPad 2, which really started struggling for like performance and stuff. So then I bought the iPad Pro.
Oh, an iPad 2? When did you get your car?
It will be 4 years old in a couple of months, but. Well, since I bought it, but technically it'll be 5 years old because it was a...
iPad 2 is older than that.
Yeah, but that's what they are that came with it. I mean, remember...
So Cadillac... Oh, so basically Cadillac got a bunch of old-ass iPads. And we're like, here, is it Cadillac? Got a Cadillac logo on it.
And,
Because that one at work is an iPad 2, and I bought that
in 2011. They kept selling iPad 2s for a long time, though, remember?
Oh yeah, and then the mini was basically an iPad 2, right, with a smaller screen, right?
So, but then I realized like last year when I got my TV, I bought an Xbox One S because I wanted a 4K Blu-ray player with HDR and all that good stuff, and so I still have my old Xbox One, and I looked at GameStop, and they'll still give you like $140 trade-in credit for like the original Xbox One. So I'm like, So I was like, well, that's like half of a Switch, basically, right there. So then I was like, maybe. You know, but then I look at the games, and it's like, well, Zelda sounds really cool. But then beyond that, there's only
that
like...
is a very good game.
There were a couple of the download games. Like, there was one that sounded kind of like a Harvest Moon or Animal Crossing type thing that might be interesting.
You have a Switch, don't you, Parker?
There's also, Well, I only have Zelda for it. I'm kind of waiting for another game called Octopath Traveler to come out. Comes out this year. It's kind of like an old school, like Final Fantasy, like 6 style game. So it's like, so I'm looking forward to that. And the interesting thing about that game is it's a 2D game, but in like the Unreal Engine. So it looks really pretty.
Is the Switch transcended the usual Nintendo model of being a first-party game adapter with nothing but shovelware and ports other than that? I mean, it's sold really well. Right?
It's actually got some pretty... Yeah, it's selling really well, and it's got really good games. It's just, right now, like, for me, I'm working through like this, my Steam backlog. Like right now, I'm playing that Nier Automata game. And, that's actually a really fun game, and it's like, fuck, I'm like 80 hours through that game.
But Jones,
now,
so. Are you looking for a portable video game system to play on the bus that you don't ride to work?
But
see, that's the thing is my Switch. When I played it too, it just sat in the dock. So I would never say to buy the Switch if you want portable video gaming. I would just say if you're interested in the games that are on it,
why wouldn't you play it?
Because they're actually
it's
a lot of fun.
Pretty huge portable.
This is the thing is like the good games for it, like Zelda. It actually kind of sucks playing Zelda on it because the screen is only 7 inches and you have this. You have this entire background to look at, and your character never stays in the center of the screen.
So you're saying you don't...
You lose track of your character. Oh. Well, if the game was built for portables, usually your character stays in the center of the screen, and your character has a ginormous contrast difference between it and the background, so you can easily know where your character is at on a small screen. The games I've played on the Switch are not like that. Like Zelda, Link is the same kind of color palette and colors.
Well, maybe he should change his clothes.
Which makes
he's camouflage.
Sure. But it makes sense though for like, but like he blends in because he's supposed to. And you play Octopath Traveler, like there's a demo for it. It's really easy to lose where your character is at on the screen. Now, if you play it on a regular big screen TV, you don't have this problem.
I suppose that would be exacerbated by playing it in a portable situation where the lighting conditions can change on a dime.
That too, yeah. But it's a backlit screen, so I never really had problems
with
that.
It still would be affected. Like if you were in a subway and you're underground and then you're all of a sudden above ground.
And someone didn't
steal
your Switch.
To me, like one of the things that felt appealing about it, but based on what you're saying, maybe it isn't, was kind of the portability aspect. And it was more for the fact that the idea of just being able to like kick back on the couch and just like sit there and play a game like away from distractions, like sounded appealing because like...
Well, it depends, I guess, how close you keep the... I've never actually like took it and like laid back on the couch and put it over my head.
Yeah.
I've always used like it's got like a kickstand. And so I was on like the
but it's
toilet
like,
playing Zelda.
Because to me, like the world
I had to try that once.
You should make a toilet.
To me the world is full of distractions anymore. So it's like like I play WoW. I mean I guess I can turn off chat. I mean, WoW's not too bad, really, but I mean, it's like if you're in a guild, you got guild chat going on, you got, like, all the other chats going. You just got, like, shit going on.
You have your class chat.
I mean, you can avoid it. And then, like, on my iPad, there's a couple of games I dink around with on there, but, I mean, you've always got notifications from shit, like, oh, here's an email, here's a notification from Discord, whatever. Just shit all the time. Yep. And, like, the Switch, I guess they've started to add, like, Facebook and Twitch and thing or Twitter, but you would have to like opt into that stuff. So to me, it was kind of the idea of a device where it's like, oh, I just play games on that.
So it's like the Kindle
kinda,
for games.
Yeah. One of my coworkers like
give it a shot, Jones.
But on the other hand, if you do want.
I was going to say one of my coworkers offered to like loan me his for a couple of days and I could, try the games out and stuff. So that's probably what I should do.
But if you do want to do voice chat on it, don't you have to like use your cell phone because Nintendo sucks?
I don't know. I've never tried.
I heard that's
that would not
work.
Surprise me if that was the case.
I don't know.
I don't think I'd ever want to.
Remember, I'm playing the evil devil on the shoulder.
That's the thing is, like, even on the PC, I never use, like, we never use the built-in game VoIP. We always use, Vents or something.
But,
well, you know what, Jones? If you want to buy one, you should just do it. And then on the next podcast, you could be like, my time with the Switch, a Jones story. Speaking of that, Jones, are we going to go to Han Solo, a Solo story or whatever it's called?
I think we have to.
When's that coming out?
Yeah, I mean, Train I want to go and see it just out of morbid curiosity, basically.
When's that come out?
We should take Dale because he likes everything, and just, you know, use him as like
the movie he saw and he didn't like it.
Well, let me know when y'all go, and then I'll go as well.
You saw a movie that he didn't like?
Because next week I'm going to go see Isle of Dogs.
Isle of Dogs. You know what's ridiculous? Yeah, it's like, whatever. I bet that movie's really good, but it will make like 1/20th what The Secret Life of Pets did because it's not CGI. Why do people love CGI? Why won't they watch a stop motion movie? What's the fucking difference?
I think it's how CGI movies are kind of built towards kids.
Yeah, where anything else is more artistic, so it's, you know, more like geared toward adults, apparently, or something.
Max,
well, when you watch the trailers for Isle of Dogs, it's not geared
kids. I saw a YouTube ad for it today, and it was just all the characters saying, "I love dogs, I love dogs, I love dogs." So basically, it's like, oh, people love dogs. They will love this movie.
Is this a sequel to Must Love Dogs?
Oh, no.
I haven't even heard of this movie until now. So
it's a Wes Anderson stop animation movie.
Okay. Isle of Dogs? All right.
You should watch the trailer for it.
It looks really good.
That fantastic
crazy
Mr. Fox movie he did, but I heard it was good. Okay.
You gotta watch that movie. Yeah, you gotta watch that.
I need to watch Phantom Thread also, because Dale told me it's like if Kubrick and Wes Anderson made a movie, it would be like Phantom Thread. And I'm like, well, it was the P.T. Anderson movie Day-Lewis that came out late last year.
So, speaking of that, should we move on to the movie topic? We're actually keeping pretty on task today.
Everybody can wait and see what happens, you know, next month.
A little bit.
See if I bought a Switch or not, and see if I eat crow.
I think you'll... I'll put it this way. So if you buy a Switch, you'll probably still be playing Zelda by then.
So you would eat crow because you
hated
the Switch
before? Yeah, like, you know, me and you were both very negative about it before it was coming out. We're like, who the fuck wants this thing? This is going to be a flop, you know?
That's the thing is, even back then, I agreed with you on the portability of it.
I still agree with myself.
I don't think I would ever take it out of stock. But the thing is, the games that are coming out for it, Zelda was really good. The Mario was really good. The Octopath Travel. Well, if you like those style
Xenoblade
games,
Chronicles
like JPRGs, they look
like
really good.
Supposed to be really good.
Yeah, it's on my list. That game is sitting in my Amazon cart. Right
I wonder
now.
What a crow tastes like. Probably chicken.
You could ask Arnold Schwarzenegger because he had to bite one in Conan.
Probably.
Apparently, he had to get a bypass surgery today.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, someone was fucked up with his heart.
No, I think it was a mate.
Yeah, because
like,
he said the procedure
though.
He had done 20
like
years
emergency.
Ago needed to be fixed or something.
I was gonna say because he had one way back, like after Batman and Robin, right?
Well, he probably saw the movie and he was like, my heart. It's as cold as ice, Batman.
I remember when End of Days came out because it was like a big deal because that was like his, you know, first movie after, you know, having the surgery and all that. That was like his comeback.
At 30,000 feet, your heart will freeze and beat no more. Well, that's what killed Bill Paxton. He went in for like some sort of experimental heart thing, which wasn't a big deal. And then he died.
Oh, really? I guess I didn't hear how it happened.
Was it because of the surgery, or is it because of something else, though? I think it was from...
His family's actually suing the place that did it because it was like an experimental surgery, and the doctor wasn't experienced enough. So basically, it was some sort of experimental procedure that was fucked up, and that's why he died.
Jesus.
Yeah, because if you think about it, people have heart bypasses all the time.
Well, that sucks.
You think rich actor could get, like, you know, super, super good surgery.
Yeah. Huh.
So we have this joke at the shop, whereas every time Scarlett Johansson does a voice in an animated movie, that the producers make her like get into a costume of the animal.
And talk so, extra husky.
Yep. Yeah, so it's so it was like, get into that computer for her. Get into the snake costume for Jungle Book. Then it was a porcupine costume for Sing, and she's also in Isle of Dogs. So there'd be like this Chihuahua costume that's like 10 times smaller than her, and she won't fit in it, and then she'll be like in pain, like, ah! So forced method acting.
But it'll have a really nice rack. It'll be the first Chihuahua to have a nice rack. So there you go.
Hey, that's not politically correct to say anymore.
You have
microaggressed me.
Micro—that's a term.
You've never heard that term.
Microaggressed.
You never heard of that term before, Jones? Microaggressions.
In the olden days, they called it having a conversation.
Oh yeah, that's a big thing now.
Hmm. Okay. Like 5 years ago, they called it.
I got a really good example, Ben. I got it. So a microaggression in the South would be there's someone that you don't know, and so you're talking to them and you ask them where are they from.
What?
That is a microaggression, apparently. Yes, because it apparently implies that they're an outsider. Exactly. That's a normal thing.
It's like, where are you
talk
from?
About for yeah, small hey. Talk. If you don't know someone,
okay,
like,
let's not go down
hey,
this rabbit hole.
So what is macroaggression?
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, I can think of it.
Ben's getting uncomfortable.
Fuck you, no, Jones!
No. I'm just sitting here, I'm like, Jesus, I must like engage in macroaggression at work about every like 5 minutes then.
Well, macroaggression would be, well, Jones, you should be able to afford a Switch since you drive a Cadillac.
Ooh!
Like, things like that. But the thing is, that's a macroaggression.
No, because the thing about microaggressions is it's usually that's a macro. That's a macro. A microaggression is usually something that the person
who asked is this
the
like the metric system
never intended.
How does this work? Because it would be a milliaggression and a megaaggression.
The red death aggression.
Yeah, I know. It's like, do we measure things in microaggressions?
How come they don't have megameters? Think about it. They talk about how far away Pluto is. And it's in kilometers. It's like, why not say it in megameters?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah, what the hell? I thought the metric system was supposed to be good.
Yeah, the metric system sucks, apparently.
That's actually one of the big.
There's no megameters.
The whole point of the metric system is not to have decimals.
Why is it? Why aren't there megameters? Think about it. It's stupid.
Why don't they get used?
No.
Then?
Megameters exist. Well, no. The reason actually, Jones, I have no idea why, and that's actually the biggest. Problem I have with the metric system is the whole point is not to have decimals or fractions, but people are like, "Oh yeah, that's 2.5 centimeters." And I'm like,
"I'm going to
store
this
like,
conversation
what, 25
onto my 2 trillion byte hard drive."
Oh my god! How the hell have we made it? How have we lived this
Europe,
many years and not asked this question?
All right, Europe. We demand megameters before we'll accept your system of measurement.
Oh, God.
No, make it true.
Well, Parker,
so you
think
have to
about,
use all the
think
units,
about engineering.
Which is like deca, milla, micro.
It's kilo, whatever, mega, whatever, milla,
yeah,
micro,
megawatts,
micro,
yep.
Nano.
No, but they don't even use all of them either. Like when you're talking about like
in which
centimeters,
case, how is it
they go like 2.5
because
centimeters.
You haven't used
like,
decimal.
There's a unit there.
It's in a unit of 10, though.
Correct. That's what I'm complaining about, Ben.
Like
when I'm president, we're going to use megameters.
Make it happen. Heckendorn 2020.
These numbers are too bigly. Okay, look at this. Pluto.
Too bigly.
Pluto is.
No, can we have
right?
We'll have
first result on Google. 7.5 billion kilometers away.
Is that just because Is that just because people know, in theory, people are more familiar with what a kilometer is? But that's just because the megameters, you know, been stuck in the corner all
these
years.
Why don't they just say 7.5 million megameters?
Jones is actually correct on that, but...
Because in the rest of the world, you know, like people drive around and they go in kilometers per hour. You know, everything's measured in kilometers, so I guess that's...
Well...
Unless you're in Britain, yeah, it's still miles per
that's
hour.
Weird.
But the thing is, the metric system
on the
is
metric
supposed
system,
to be,
and
you know,
so they're
1,
superior
000.
Than us.
Or, you know, it's all decimal, so why can't they increase it? It's like, why can't it? So if it's 7.5 million kilometers, why can't it be 7.5? Yeah, here it comes. Terameters.
No, but why is it even that? What's right below tera?
Giga or billion? See, right, but if it's if it's 7.5 billion kilometers, that means it's 7.5 trillion meters, which would be 7.5 terameters.
Yeah, I'm saying get rid of the decimal and just say whatever it is.
Like 75, whatever. Yes.
But since
the prefix.
Yeah.
The megameter whatever. Just sounds fucking badass. I mean, it's just a quality word. You know?
Yeah, it is.
It's a strong word. Sense. Strong unit of measure.
Is that even a word? I mean, it has to be a word. If it is. Okay, all right. Let's see.
Is there a Wikipedia article?
Yeah, actually, it's uppercase M, lowercase M. Megameter is a real thing, so why don't we ever hear it?
Do they not use it because people would get confused with millimeter too easily, even though that would be lowercase m, lowercase m? But maybe that's
why.
Well,
look, they have all this. We have 1 megameter is 1,000,000 meters. There's deca, heca, kilo, giga, terameter, petameter, exameter. Yeah, just like, you know, with memory and bytes. Okay.
Yep. It all exists. It's just no one uses it. Like, even on the smaller end, you got, like, you know, millimeter, centimeter, and you also have, like, decameter and micrometer and blah, 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 blah.
To Europe for...
Europe? just label it to Europe.
To the EU.
Dear
Angela
Europe.
Visa propose. Visa... Start measuring things in megameters immediately.
No, it is like, we will accept metric if you never use decimals.
You gotta start small. Be like, we require you to now measure the distance to Pluto in megameters.
I'm trying to wrap my head around the megameters. So it's 7.5 billion kilometers, then that means you have to add 3 more zeros to get it in just regular meters. And then if you divide it by 1 million, you get, of course, the new standard, megameters.
The new standard.
I like how this everything is in megameters. So, like, if you're like, a mil is like 0.0000001 megameters.
This is so fun to say.
It's just such a great word.
But now, if you think about it, look,
I just drove like.
But 7.5 billion kilometers
to across
town. So it's like
town.
You're using a number and then you're prefacing it onto another number, yes. Which is based off a number. You know, it's like you're having to do two
it's
calculations.
It's almost as bad as
like,
the imperial
system. Oh, well,
system.
How many, if it's, you know, 1,000,000 miles to this planet, how many feet is it to the planet?
Just tell us how many miles, because that's the biggest imperial
fathoms.
Unit. Oh, no, it's fathoms.
A fathom is a unit
Is a fathom bigger than a mile?
I just like that after 40 years, I can still discover new awesome words.
We should just measure stuff
that nobody uses.
Yes. Damn it, Europe. Get on the ball here. Make it happen.
Hey, what's 1 AU in kilometers. Let's see. 1.496.
This is between the sun and Earth.
Yeah.
It should be like eight.
Can I go to megameters?
And
okay, so no, here's a drop down list. It's it only goes down. It goes kilometer, meter, centimeter, blah blah blah.
You can't go up.
I'm gonna type 1A. Here we go. 1AU in megameters.
Conspiracy theory from Google.
It gave me a number.
Ooh.
Okay. Only 149,598
mm. You look at how awesome
that is. Not millimeters, megameters.
No decimals, no nothing. Just business.
Clean, easy to use.
Yep.
Good for everyone.
Free for everyone to use starting today.
Open source numbers.
Open source unit of measure.
Open source.
Oh god, megameter.
Okay, so I just made that up, but it's real, I guess.
Awesome.
Well, I mean, I didn't make it up, but
you thought you did briefly.
Have you ever heard anyone use that term before? I haven't.
Never. No.
But apparently, it's real. I mean, you have to be pretty much, and it is.
Yeah, megameter sounds way cooler than like terameter or petameter. Just quality word. It should be the new standard.
It's 1AU. I mean, it's like 93 million, right? Okay, yeah. What's above
that? You know what's above that, though? So what's above?
Ultrameter?
Ultrameter.
Gigameter.
Oh, that's got to be pretty high.
Ultrameter.
That's true.
No, giga's above mega. Mega.
No, giga is under mega. Or is it? Above it.
Okay. No, so it's Terra. It's
mega,
above
giga, giga, yeah. Ultra.
But giga is a good sounding word, too.
And then above that is super.
Terra. What about petameter? Petameter doesn't sound very good. It's like the rating your dog's hair quality.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound as good.
I don't know how you top megameter, honestly.
Yeah. Like, I think that's the best word ever made, actually.
I think we should just call it Parker meter. Parker meter is the largest unit. It like one
guys,
Parker meter
I
is like
figure
this
out
is between
how long
the
a
ends
football
of the
field
universe.
Is in megameters. Because as you know on television, a football field is standard unit of measurement
it's be a
for all
small number, America, right? Like point something something megameters.
Yeah, it's.
Oh no! But he's going to violate our new. Thing about
yeah,
decimals.
It's giving so it to me with an exponent. Down. Let me see what I got here. Okay, so yeah, it would be
3.3 0, repeating the course.
0.09. Okay, yeah, it would be
so you
like
know,
20
Jones,
minutes
the best thing about this is we spent the last 28 minutes.
Awesome. Okay,
talking about something that's not even on our list.
Okay,
I love it.
A football field is 0.000091 megameters.
This might be the greatest topic we've ever had. Certainly top 10.
Oh yeah, this is great.
Yep. Okay, that checks out. Yeah. Because in my mind, I think of it like, and I always think of like computer speeds, but it checks out. Yeah. So so it's 000,000,000, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, it's, So see, maybe it could be like, you know, like Aaron Rodgers throws a pass and it's good for, 16 megameters. Oh, I'm sorry, 0.000016 megameters. Down.
So I can just imagine it in school. Okay, we instigate the megameter, right? And so kids in school get the new ruler. And it's a stick with a zero on it and nothing else on it because a megameter is so far away. But they can't carry a stick that's a megameter long, or they actually have a stick that's
a
megameter long.
You would have no chance because it
would
somehow
figure out how to get in school.
Like miles and miles. here to give you some frame of reference, since we're, you know, Americans and don't have metric things. So 1 megameter equals 621.371 miles. Yeah, it's a big fucking ruler.
Holy shit.
Wait, how big?
Six.
Yeah, it's a big fucking ruler.
621.371 miles in 1 megameter. More than that.
How far is it to the moon?
Oh.
No.
So you can't poke the moon with it then.
I could poke like
you'd be able to slap the International Space Station out of the air though.
My calculation for the Earth is incorrect, so Jones is right. Oh, so a megameter, it's not that big. Well, yeah, I mean it's big.
If you had a ruler that big, you could swat the International Space Station out of the sky.
Oh, wait, what was it? 621.371.
You might even be able to reach the Dakotas with that.
You would need 2.5 of those to get to Texas, though. And you need two of those to get out of Texas.
To get across.
See, how many megameters would you... Oh, 408 of those end-to-end would reach the moon.
Wow.
No, that's not too bad.
Yeah. Impressive.
Well, do we have time to talk about movies after?
Yeah, why not?
Sure, we can make this a super mega episode.
We finally have stats for this podcast.
Oh yes, Ben discovered that there's such a thing as like tracking.
Oh yeah,
listens to things because of his new
site. Yeah, it turns out there's just a plugin for WordPress. It's like,
what is this episode?
Yeah, well we get like 1,500 listeners a month, basically.
Nice.
I'm surprised that many people listen to this long rambling stuff. Although after the mega meter thing, you know, it's going to go.
I think numbers are going to like double at least.
No, I think we're actually going to lose. We're going to double
because we're reaching out to them
lose
for
everyone
their help.
In the EU.
You know, we're like, hey,
yeah, we're reaching across the aisle.
Yes, it's like we need them to help make Megameter really take hold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without them, I mean, we can't make it happen from here. You know, we can help.
Get rid of decimals.
It's got to take root.
Maybe we could petition the White House to have Trump talk about his wall length in megameters, and he could be like, it's only like 3 megameters. That's not so bad. Bigly.
It would probably be like 1 megameter
to make.
Probably
no, be longer than that.
Well, there's like mountains and shit, though.
Well, no, because you think megameter makes something sound smaller. Like, oh yeah, that pipeline, it's only going to be like 2 megameters.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that doesn't sound so
yeah,
bad.
It's like, oh, yeah, we'll throw a couple billion at that. No big deal.
Yeah, it would be like in Germany
miles?
When they had hyperinflation and they just lobbed zeros off of their currency. It's like, oh, sand's not so bad.
Yeah, there you go. fun.
But let us know what you think about megameters in the comments below. So yeah, you want to talk about movies before we go?
Sure.
So Joe Parker, you saw Ready Player One?
Mm.
Yeah.
I read the book.
I saw a movie before any of these goons saw a movie.
You may call me a goon, but someday when my picture is in
the
encyclopedia
book,
next to who invented the megameter.
On March 30th, 2018.
No. This thing, it was a Wikipedia article. I would edit it to be
at 7:03 p.m.
Heckendorn
Central Time. Good.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, I
good,
saw
bad,
Ready Player One last night. And it's a movie. So I'll definitely say the visual effects are the CG is like probably one of the best I've seen them in a movie before. Mainly because it's, you know, it takes place in what's called the Oasis, which is like a VR program, so they can get away with, you know, CG stuff. And so you accept CG graphics, I guess, at that point. So it looks really good. The writing is really good in terms of like the references, because like it's a movie about throwbacks from the 80s, 90s. And the thing is, everyone's like, oh, yeah, 80s, blah, blah. Well, I'm like, no, there's shit there from like the.
Well, like Tracer, what do we call now? Overwatch shows
is that what we're going to call?
You know,
zero zeros.
But I mean, the book is very 80s oriented, but they updated the movie a bit so that other, you know, like younger people would recognize things in it, which, you know, understandable. Gotcha. So.
Oh, yeah, it's understandable. I recognize every single reference in there. So there's definitely 80s, 90s.
Yeah, the teens, I suppose, or something.
And what's, I guess, 10s? Yeah. We're just going to wrap around, I guess, 10s. Teens. So the thing is, all the references in the movie are really well written that actually pertain to the plot. So it's not like they just plugged it in just to have like, hey, we have a reference the South Park episode of the Member Berries. It's like, it's not like that. It's like they reference it when they reference it in terms of the plot, it actually, they did the research and it makes sense. And the only bad thing is just the story. The plot is just
it's pretty standard.
I've seen this plot like 20 times in movies or more. Yeah.
Isn't it's a pretty like standard Willy Wonka plot. Meets 80s nostalgia.
But, you know, whatever.
Kinda sorta. Cause yeah, it's like, it's basically like there's this rich dude, like the guy who created the Oasis and everything, like, yeah, there's some contest to find this thing in the Oasis, whoever like finds it first, and there's like clues and stuff, but whoever finds it first basically wins the Oasis, right? Yeah, so.
Correct. That's,
of course, there's a
so that's the story. And then, and at least in the movie, because I haven't read the book, there's a an evil corporation, because they have to make that clear. Basically hires a ton of people because they're like the number two company in the world, and they never actually say what the number one is, but it's probably whatever runs Oasis. That's the biggest downfall of the movie. Is I don't know if they explain it in the book, but
yeah, I think that's
no one knows
how it is.
Who runs the Oasis.
Yeah,
like is it AWS? Is it Aegis, or is it, you know, iCloud, whatever? But barring that, it's yeah. So it's like basically whoever wins the contest will, you know, inherit the Oasis. And there's a company called 101 or something like that, that basically hires a bunch of people, and they try to make it like it's supposed to be like a dystopian future where, like, you know, VR is the escape from reality, because reality sucks, which makes a lot of sense in the future, because because reasons, and, you know. But the thing is, the movie kind of plays with that topic a lot, where it's like the future sucks and so we escape to this VR reality, but it just lightly touches the topic and then just backs away and then focuses on this contest. Which is fine. It's just one of those, like, I really wish they dove into that instead. Where they dove into this dystopian future where, like, if you are in debt to, like, this 101 company, they can enslave you to their, they call them,
remember, but that's basically how they get all these players, right? Is that that's their way of getting out of debt.
Is
by playing the game for the company, and then if one of the players wins, like the company, you know, gets the Oasis. And of course, you've got the couple of hero characters, you know, the scrappy poor kids, whatever, that, you know, that they're the heroes, that are trying to get to the treasure first.
So it's really it's Willy Wonka.
Very much, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. It's Willy Wonka in the future with 80s, 90s,
Ben
aughts, and
to see this
tweens,
movie.
Tween teens references.
What? Ben needs to see this movie because
no, the thing is,
the Iron Giant is in it, and
my
Ben
so
loves
this
the Iron Giant.
About this movie is it's basically a Black Mirror episode for kids.
Kinda, yeah, I could see that.
And I will say, though, it did give us a moment in the movie where a Gundam fights a Mecha Godzilla. And that was pretty fucking badass.
Iron Giant's in it, and he's like, he's not just in it as a cameo, at least that's what I understood. Like, he actually
but,
plays
correct,
a part.
He goes full on.
Why does
Liberty?
Why does
on
but that's
Kane.
Against what Iron Giant was about.
Sure, but whatever.
See,
I would say it's a very the story is very safe. I think it's this movie is really geared towards my age group, so like 28 to 34.
Oh, you mean
that have kids?
Millennials.
Yeah, it's geared to millennials that have kids, so it's a movie that you can take your kid to, and the kid is going to be entertained by the flashing CG and stuff because it looks really great. And you're like, oh, yeah. Like, seriously, like the people who sat next to me were my age, and they had their like 7-year-old kid. And the guy next to me, like, we were like chatting, like, oh, yeah, I got that reference. You know that reference? Yeah, I got that one. And like, oh, what is that reference? And the guy's like, oh yeah, it's this thing. And yeah, so it's like, it's that. It's like, do you remember? And like, I remember. And no, the thing is though, is like some of the references are
that's
really
thing,
well
like
done,
if it's
though.
Like how the book so. Was, like they do fit very organically into the story. It's not like it's not just yes. like, oh, look at this, yes. look at this. It's like there's like a purpose and a, like a reason for those things to be in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like. Yeah, like there's a spot where like there's a whole bunch of Master Chiefs and it's like because they're leading like the charge of an army. It's like, OK, that makes a lot of sense.
Because yeah, basically it's like this, you know, imagine something like World of Warcraft, except that it's just like this massive thing that everybody in the world plays and it's kind of like developed out of pop culture and everything. Which I mean, to be honest, like World of Warcraft even has stuff like that. Like there was like a Ronda Rousey type inspired character in it and stuff, and there's like a Harrison Jones who's basically Indiana Jones running around, you know. So but it's like, you know, just imagine that, like if we all got stuffed into this virtual world where stuff like that could happen in there, you know, like fuck, I'd probably be running around with like Jar Jar Binks as my sidekick. That'd be fucking awesome, you know.
You would be Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, I'd probably just hang out with him. It'd be cool. But
so my biggest problem with the movie is the fact that it was just too safe with what it was dealing with. Like, I wish it went more into like how this dystopian future, like how people lived in it. They touch on it, but it wasn't like terrible.
See, that's why I don't think I need to see this movie, because the main reason I would want to see it is because I really enjoy the futurism that Spielberg did in AI and Minority Report.
Yeah.
And if
see, that's what I was expecting
this movie
when Spielberg said he was going to do it.
That,
I saw the
I
trailers and I'm like, it's got some of it. It definitely touches on it, but it's like, we're going to start that topic and just kind of not do anything.
But otherwise it's just the Matrix with nostalgia, and I don't care about nostalgia. So,
watch it when it comes on Amazon Prime Video.
Maybe. Man. I lived through the 80s. I remember it. I mean, I don't need it remembered for me.
Is the good thing about it, though, is it doesn't fall into the, you know, people do something stupid to advance the plot. So it's like, okay, the plot sounds.
Oh, so it's not
like
Walking Dead.
Yes, basically people don't make stupid decisions. The main characters are likable.
Actually, you know, I didn't watch Wreck-It Ralph for that same reason, and then when I did watch it, I enjoyed it. Because
what was that?
Nostalgia, probably.
Right, I thought it was just going to be like, oh, look at this video game character. Remember Q-Bert? Blah blah blah. But that's not really what the movie was. So,
yeah, you should. I think this thing, the nostalgia things, are mostly backseat things in the movie. It's like, it's like in one part, a World of Warcraft orc like does something, but it's like, it's not because a World of Warcraft orc did it. It wouldn't have mattered what that
character
was.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing where, like, pretend you somehow had all your pop culture knowledge, like, deleted, and you watched it. You know, they'd just be, like, characters within the movie. It's just like...
yeah, exactly.
It's an extra, I don't know, bonus, depending on your point of view, to be like, oh, cool, there's, like, Thrall or something, and there's Tracer,
well, I suppose,
you know, but...
In a movie form, they wouldn't have to waste their time explaining that it's a character. You would just see it, unlike the book.
Yes, true. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say the most impressive thing with the movie would be who the lawyer team that was able to get all these licenses. Because even like Freddy Krueger
it's
one scene. He's like in it for like maybe like 10 frames.
It's Spielberg. It's the same reason.
Thing.
You know. Yeah.
I know.
Frame Roger Rabbit, they had Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny on the same scene. It's all
because that's how Back to the Future stuff is in it. Because, you know, Spielberg was a producer on those, you know, but.
Oh, yeah.
And he has the clout to make those deals happen.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to argue against that. That's the reason why. I'm just impressed that it's impressive that all these things are in there. And it's not like a lookalike. It's like that is fucking Master Chief from Halo in there. That's a proper King Kong. That is, I'd say go see it. I think I went into it expecting more Black Mirror, dark.
I wouldn't
like dystopian stuff. If I read the book, I probably would have been like, okay,
so it's more like Gray Mirror.
yeah, Gray Mirror. That's a good episode.
You could put that on the DVD box.
There you go. It'll be like how Edge of Tomorrow became Live, Die, Repeat. It's Ready Player One. Become Gray Mirror.
Yeah, it's a Black Mirror episode that you can let your kids watch because it's, you know, in the end, everything is all happy and roses because that's just how these plots turn out.
Spoiler warning.
So
anyone with half a brain can figure that out when you watch the movie.
Jones, I watched Justice League.
Good.
Now, how many IQ points did you lose, Ben?
I was fine. I mean, the middle of it was kind of boring. I would say
I've never watched the whole thing. I got to the middle and turned it off.
Yeah, I was a little bored in the middle of it. I thought the end battle was actually pretty well done. I thought it was almost a little bit more cohesive than the one in Wonder Woman. Like I've said many times, I think Wonder Woman falls apart in the third act, but because they didn't do any reshoots. But Justice League, you know, like where the team comes together, it worked. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't the greatest film ever or anything. And I also rewatched Last Jedi.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Why'd you put yourself
Jones,
through that?
Remember when you were talking about how much you loved Star Trek Into Darkness? And I was like, oh, I hate that movie.
Yes,
I hate that movie.
Yes.
And then I said to you, wait till they do this to your
Star
Wars.
Oh, you did.
And then you'll understand how I feel.
So this is how you felt then.
And it's kind of like the inverse because I didn't hate Last Jedi. I just thought it had a lot of stupid things in it. But a lot of Star Wars people just hated it.
Yeah. But yes, you did say, I do remember you saying that. And you said it before, like, because it was right after Into Darkness came out, and that was before like Abrams was ever mentioned with Star Wars. Was that even before Disney bought them?
Disney bought it before. They bought it in 2012, which was before
Into Darkness. Then
Into Darkness came out.
But you were like, "Yep, just you wait, someday." And then, sure enough, I started getting worried though when they did hire Abrams to do Force Awakens. I'm like, "Oh shit."
Because
he did both Star Trek. So,
Force Awakens is actually not bad.
It's better than Last Jedi, I would say. Like, it's, I don't particularly care for it a lot, but it's a better movie, I would say, than Last Jedi. Yes.
No, just the fact that in Last Jedi, the characters somehow are idiots.
I would
now.
Say.
Just completely ruins the movie.
I would say one thing about it, though, yeah. Jones, after rewatching it. So I was mostly bored the whole time. I was just aggressively bored by
it.
Yeah. And like the humor, I actually liked the humor the first time I saw it, but it, you know, didn't have any lasting power. So here's the thing that you'll probably like hope you're sitting down, but having rewatched both of them, I guess I would say I like Rogue One better.
Oh my gosh.
Which I know is what all of you Star Wars people already said. Okay, so I still think Rogue One is a piece of shit.
This is a bigger piece of shit.
I think
this is an elephant shit versus a cow shit.
Last Jedi at least is a movie like Rogue One. Nothing important happens until the last battle. It's just all filler. But when the last battle happens, it's the most Star Wars-y of any of the new movies.
Oh yes, definitely.
Like the last half hour is good.
Yes,
where it's got like space battle, ground assault, then sneaking into the base. It's all really good.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of the movie is completely boring. But then, as I said, I was completely bored rewatching Last Jedi. So I'm like, okay, well, if I'm going to be completely bored for an hour and a half, which movie has a better ending? And then I would say Rogue One does. Although Last Jedi is 2.5 hours long. Yeah. It's way too long. Oh, and I timed it. Canto Bite is only 15 minutes, but it feels like, you know, 40.
Still you cut that off. Yeah, it feels you're down like to forever. 2:15 now. You lose nothing.
Yeah. See, I don't mind the green alien tit milk.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone hates that.
I think that's,
I thought that
in my opinion,
that's
well,
funny. It. Like when he sits there and he holds the thing up and he kind of has that look on his face. Like it was just funny. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with that scene. That's one of the
alien,
better scenes.
If an alien came to Earth,
the scenes on the island.
If an alien came to Earth and saw this fat, dumb creature walking around in its own shit, and then we drank the white stuff coming out of its like gross looking thing under its belly. What would they think of us?
Yeah, that was like a sack with nipples on it.
Or like we hook up this machine and all the cows are sitting there like eating and shitting right next to the pipes and we drink it.
Yeah, I had zero problems with that. Like I didn't get people freaking out about that, but I mean I freaked out about shit in it that people probably don't understand either. So, but I don't know. It's just like, Star Wars is, I don't know, Disney has really driven it off a cliff, and I don't see it recovering with the Han Solo movie by any means. So
it feels like if they could make a Frankenstein's monster of these Star Wars movies, like if they could take the first 40 minutes of Force Awakens and the last 30 minutes of Rogue One and then put something else in the middle, that would be a fantastic film. Yeah.
I like how you completely ignored Last Jedi because nothing of it is good.
The plot holes in it don't make any goddamn sense. Like when they get when they get captured on the ship and Benicio del Toro betrays them. Like, why does the Empire give him money?
Yeah.
Why? Because
the thing
he says
when you
listen. He says the troop says his information checks out. The rebels are escaping their ship using small cloaked ships. How did he know that? Finn and Rose didn't know that. So he betrays them by giving the Empire information he doesn't even possess. It's stupid.
Yeah, it would only be if he somehow knew from that.
Agreed.
Because there's that part on the ship when they're taken off from the casino planet and he shows, you know, that this guy that had the ship was selling against both sides. Like, if I was going to try to defend that, I'd be like, oh, maybe he somehow accessed like that guy's records and figured, but I mean, it's horse shit. I mean, I agree. It's horse shit.
Yeah.
It's completely stupid. Like, why would they pay him off? It's like the only reason they'd pay him off.
No,
is
they were just actually, it was the Empire. Sense. They were just killed him after they got the information too.
Yes. Because it's cheaper just to get the information and then kill him than to pay him for the information. It's not like he planned that all along because the information basically he tells them that they're escaping with cloaked ships, which I think is still stupid. And yeah, it doesn't make any goddamn sense. And it still has – oh, no, there was a deleted scene. I thought that was going to fix the part where Phasma's about to execute Finn and Rose, and then the ship hits, and then she teleports 300 yards away. I mean, but then there's a deleted scene, right? And I'm like, oh, this is going to answer it. It's like, no, the deleted scene happens after that. It's after he breaks her mask and she falls into the flame, she comes back again, and they have another fight. That's the deleted scene. So that doesn't even explain. That doesn't. Yeah. Terrible. So I thought the deleted scene would explain the teleportation, but it doesn't. That's the kind of. See, I don't care if they like deconstruct a hero. I don't care about blue tit milk. But shit like that is stupid. It's just terrible filmmaking.
I love hearing this because I think this is probably what I sound like to people at work when I get on a rant about this fucking movie. So it's nice hearing it coming from somebody else. So.
But you know the scene I'm talking about? Like,
oh, I hated the because
I thought I was maybe imagining it or misremembering it. It's like, no, she's like, execute them. And they raise up the things that are about to hit them. Then Laura Dern does her clever girl thing. And then Finn and Rose are laying there. Everyone around them is dead except for them. And then Phasma has teleported 300 yards away. And she walked, I guess, so she can walk
with
smoke.
A whole bunch of troops behind her. You know, they're all in formation still.
Yes. Even like, she was like 5 feet from them.
They're all in formation, you know, like just because it looks cool.
There is no, there's no excuse. Like, what the hell happened?
You know, this is the thing about that movie, too. It's the first time we see remote hacking in Star Wars.
So here's what they should have done.
And I
hate what they should have done. It should have been a warp inhibitor instead of a warp tracker.
No, and the thing is, warp inhibitors exist.
Now,
okay,
hear me
Star
out
Wars
because
lore.
Finn says, oh, all the ships have warp trackers, but we have to find the lead ship and disable its warp trackers, and we'll have 6 minutes before the other warp trackers fill in the no blah 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 blah, right? If you have a
and this is the thing though, is that no, I mean, the thing is like, why didn't he just tell the rebellion that from the get go
because this,
that they have
the screenplay
that technology.
Sucks. Now here's the thing: if you switch it to a warp inhibitor, then it's like okay, there's a warp inhibitor, and that sounds like the kind of thing that's special, and that would be on the main ship. So we just have to disable one of them. Mm-hmm. So it would have been so much simpler for like him and Rose to sneak onto the ship and then have like Die Hard on a Star Destroyer. And their mission is to disable that warp inhibitor. And then they do it. The ships escape, but then they're captured. And that's your cliffhanger for part 3.
Well, the primary thing with that was stupid is like, you know, like the characters on the rebel ship, like they make this big stink about like when, you know, like when the First Order shows up after they jump to light speed the first time, they're like, holy crap, you know, they tracked us. Like it was some new thing. It's like, no, they fucking tracked like the Millennium Falcon in the first fucking movie 40 years ago. You know, and it's like, yes, they had to have a tracker on the ship to do it, but it's like, how do all the rebels on that ship not real, you know, why wouldn't they think like, oh, maybe there's a spy on board and they planted something?
Or the tracker, you know, the tracker could be planted in Finn's brain because he was a stormtrooper.
But it's like, none of those thoughts come up. They just automatically, it's like, oh my God, they must have some new technology, blah, 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 blah. It's,
and then if it would have been like, oh, there's a spy among us, then it would have been like, oh, now there's a reason for Laura Dern not to tell anyone her plan.
Exactly.
Yes. That's the thing. If they're so intent on having a slow speed space chase, then they should have actually been a little bit more clever about the plot. But instead, they make the most convoluted plot possible. It'd be like Mad Max Fury Road. They're in that super truck. And it's like, we need more help. And if one of the girls like rode away on a motorcycle and then came back 20 minutes later with like help.
Yeah. That's
right.
Much,
that would be stupid. Because it's that dumb. And they could have made it so much easier with like just Die Hard on the ship. But if you think about like Empire Strikes Back, you know, how they're chasing the Millennium Falcon. And it's because the Millennium Falcon, the hyperdrive is broken. So there's a reason to have that manual chase. And in this one, you're given a very sloppy reason, like, oh, they have this device and we need a hacker. Whereas in Empire, it's like the hyperdrive is broken. So while they're doing their chase, you can have ongoing action of them trying to fix the hyperdrive. My hands are dirty. Your hands are dirty, too. You know, all that stuff.
Yep. It's like a show that did this better would be Battlestar Galactica. And like, was it like the third or second episode?
The first one after the pilot was 33. Yeah. I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah, so they keep jumping.
And then they have to blow up one of their own ships because they realize that's the one being tracked.
Well, no, but they figure it out after like jumping for like days. But in this movie, they figured out at the first one, and someone's like, they must be able to track us somehow. And everyone's just like, maybe they just got lucky or whatever. Like, how did you make that decision right away?
There were so many other things they could have thought of there other than just like, oh my God, they have some new technology. You know, like, yes, the new technology could have been one of the things, but there were all sorts of other things that they, in theory, would have given a higher priority and had to like rule out before new technology would have been the answer.
And yeah, like what if there was a tracking device like on
one
of the
ships?
And
the problem with that is all of that information is non-visual. It's like you have Finn saying, "Oh, tracking device," and Rose is like, "Blah blah blah." They're just talking. Like, but if you had like Leia pushing the lever for warp speed and then it doesn't work, that's a visual thing. It's like, oh look, here's a visual representation of how they're trapped, not us saying, oh, they must have a tracker, blah blah blah. It's just too much talking.
Oh yeah, and that would be a really cool effect. Like it would like they pull the lever forward and like the stars come back and then they just go back normal. Like that would have been really
cool.
But
then it would have been like, oh look, we're used to seeing what hyper jump looks like, but now they can't do it. We understand visually in the story what's going on, like they're trapped, like they say, oh, we've got them on the end of a string. Huck says that. Well, that would have literally been like them on the end. Well, not literally, but more appropriately them on the end of a string. But yeah, it's just like one of those things. Like film is a visual storytelling medium. And like you have something where it's like, oh no, you need to disable this device, which we're not showing you. It's on the ship in a place we're not showing you. And you need to go find this hacker that we're not showing you. And then he can do it, right? It's like it was all talking. Like the entire plot was talk. And they wonder why no one wants
the cardinal sin of filmmaking, basically, is to like tell, don't show. Yeah, it's funny that came out on video, and like you texted me the other day saying you were watching it again, and I'm like, oh, I didn't even realize that came out. Like, that's just how far I've gotten away from like, the Star Wars shit now. It's just like,
Well. I wanted to see it again, you know, because when I saw it, that was, you know, before all the months of whining and bitching online. But I would say I probably liked it less, actually, because I was bored watching it again. So my opinion was not improved. And then, like even more plot holes showed up, like, the fact that Benicio del Toro betrays them with information he can't possibly have. The audience knows that, but his character doesn't.
I saw that movie 3 times in the theater for some reason because I saw it the first time I saw it at.
Well, you've seen
I saw it at a free showing for like Pure Storage put on like this thing, so I got to see it for free. But then I had already committed to Dale to go and see it like that Sunday, so I went for that. And then my boss at work took the. Department to go and see it like in early January or something. So I saw it 3 times, only paid once, but I was like, wow, this is a movie that I would have seen once total, but I ended up seeing it 3 times just because of circumstance. So.
Oh, so those plot holes are probably more even more reinforced.
Yeah. I mean, the second time I saw it, I'm like, okay, this will give me a chance to, you know, maybe I missed something. Like you said, with the Phasma coming out of the thing, you know, it's like, oh, maybe I just missed a shot that explained that or something, you know?
I went to the bathroom.
But it's like, no. Nope. And then, the stupid thing with R2 in the fucking AT-ST there. I mean, BB-8, I should say. I mean, it's like, BB-8's pretty cool and all that, but that was just so fucking stupid. I'm just like...
But he's like a murderous rampager now.
But that thing is how the fuck.
Well, and then the top of it pops off just so you can see that it's BB-8 in it. It's like, what the
fuck? Yep. Yeah. That's convenient.
That's true. Whereas in like Return of the Jedi, they just cut to like it stopped and like Chewie comes out of the AT-ST.
Oh, something else. I didn't mind Rey's lack of character development. I mean, she's not really the main character anymore, thing. But I think it's like the Force is making her powerful naturally to stop Kylo Ren.
Yes.
It's the balance of the Force.
Even though, if you think about it, in Empire takes place several years after New Hope, and Luke can barely pull his lightsaber out of the snow, and this movie takes place minutes after Force Awakens, and Rey can like pull lightsabers across rooms. Because I really think I guarantee that JJ is probably going to have to retcon some of this and actually explain what the hell's up with her. You know that. Because otherwise, it's like just stupid.
We've seen Star Wars movies before.
We know the progression that characters need to go through in order to become Jedi's. And when you see something like that, like this doesn't match what I know.
I still don't buy into the thing where her parents are nobodies. Like I have a feeling that'll be something JJ will retcon in some way. I mean, that's part of the problem. Yeah. I mean, I know we've been talking forever, but it's like, to me, that's like a core problem of these new movies is, you know, people can say what they want about, you know, the prequels in order, but it's like Lucas had, you know, a vision and a plan for those three movies where with these new ones, it's like, Abrams does this one and he gets to go off and write the screenplay with some people and do whatever, but then they hand it to the next guy and then he gets to kind of take that and do whatever the fuck he wants with it. And then the next person has to come along and take that and do whatever the fuck they can with it. You know, like there's no overarching plan to it. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah. Like
if anything, they should have just gave JJ all three. Cause JJ got the first one and then the second one he didn't get.
Yeah. He didn't want it, but,
and then after the basically all the shit the second one got.
Here's the thing, I think the third one. You know, well, as you said, Jones, like Last Jedi is the most explained movie ever. So you know internally Disney, you know, is thinking about this. They're not going to say they are, but they are. And I think that's one of the reasons why they brought back Abrams was because it was like a safe bet. And I mean, he is a more talented director than Colin Trevorrow, who of course is now directing Jurassic World.
Of course. Well, yeah, I mean, this movie did nothing in China, you know, which is a big deal, of course. And I mean, it made like $300 million less than what Disney was, you know, expecting. You know, I mean, that's not trivial.
It's been beaten by Black Panther.
Yes, yeah.
At least in America. Yeah, who would have thought like a C-list Marvel character has outgrossed a Disney Star Wars movie?
It outgrossed Avengers and like freaking everything. Like the only movies that'll be ahead of it domestically are freaking Force Awakens and Avatar. Pretty crazy.
Yeah. I was going to say one thing I really noticed in Last Jedi is like the General Hux guy. He's like a Mel Brooks Nazi.
Yeah,
he's a joke.
Pretty ridiculous.
It's like, do you remember? They didn't have characters like that in the original. Like, he's like a nothing.
He's
it's
like a
pathetic.
Joke evil guy. Like, whereas, like, Tarkin, you look at him, it's like, okay, this guy's kind of like a cold son of a bitch, you know, and all that.
Yeah. It's like, I hope they fix that because it's not, there's no tension, you know? It's like, the only part that's good is when Kylo Ren is laying there in the throne room and Hux starts to blow out his gun. Like, he's going to shoot him, but then Kylo Ren rakes up, so he puts it back away. Like, that was good. Like, there should be more.
That was very good,
I didn't like that character. It's just a joke. Although you can think about it, like, when he's talking to Poe Dameron, it's like, oh, it's ex machina.
Oh, yes.
All right, we should probably wrap this up, guys.
It's pretty
epic. I'm sure the internet was really hoping for more Last
Jedi.
We're
almost up to the Last Jedi's runtime, so yeah, we better cut this off.
I can't believe people
more
listen to these whole
things. More substance here, though. I mean, we talked about the fucking mega meter. More than you get out of the Last Jedi.
Ah, so that's what they need to put in the
mega
in episode 9. Is megameters.
Well, there'll probably be another
megaparsecs. I guess actually
that could be an entirely different movie.
Exactly.
All right. Well,
50 Shades
what
of
do
Megasex.
You, what do you think about software as service? Should Jones buy a Switch? Have you played PUBG? Let us know in the comments below.
Adios.
later, I guess.